No one would deliberately pour sticky tar into the works of an expensive wristwatch. Yet millions are dripping black deadly tar into the more delicate parts of their own body. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing facts. Hello, this is Joe Cruz and the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. Now, in our last broadcast, we introduced a special two-part series on the laws of health. We continue that study today into the original diet and also how so many unfit and unclean foods were gradually incorporated into that human diet. When God made the body, He also gave specific operating instructions, as we found in our last broadcast, including fuel and maintenance. Now notice this counsel of God in Genesis 1:29. Behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. Now friends, there it is, and nobody has ever been able to improve on that. Nuts, fruits, grains, and vegetables are still recognized by the best nutritionists as the very finest possible diet. And no one need be reluctant to espouse the ideal vegetarian diet commanded by a perfect God for the perfect bodies He created in the beginning. Now today, under the increasing curse of sin, those bodies have degenerated in both size and stamina. But no argument or scientific data has been able to challenge the wisdom of God's original arrangement. But notice how the American people have departed from the simplicity of that original recipe. Today, the average eater's plate is loaded with heavy meat protein, carbohydrates, and pastries. In the beginning, God didn't even allow for the use of meat. Did you notice that? Apparently, flesh was permitted in man's diet for the first time only after the floodwaters had annihilated all vegetable matter. But only certain meats, please keep this in mind. Notice the instruction God gave to Noah. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens the male and his female, and of beasts that are not clean by two the male and his female. Genesis 7:2. Now don't miss the significant fact that the law of clean and unclean animals extends all the way back to the beginning of human history. Now a lot of people have assumed that only the Jewish people were forbidden to eat those unclean animals. Not so. There were no Jews in Noah's day, yet the distinction is clearly made here. Now, why were extra clean animals taken into the ark? They went in by sevens, notice. Because all vegetation would be wiped out in the flood, and for the first time, God would allow man to eat meat, but only the clean meat. If Noah and his family had eaten any of the unclean animals, then that species would have ceased to exist, because only a male and female had been preserved of each kind to perpetuate the species. There were seven pairs of the clean animals in the ark. Only they could be spared for food without endangering the continuity of their kind. Now, since it's evident that even some Genesis-kind animals were unclean, how do we determine where the line is drawn between the clean and the unclean? Well, God has not left us to wonder about the important issue, friends. In Leviticus 11, 3-11, the requirements are clearly laid out. Whatsoever parteth a hoof and is cloven-footed and cheweth a cud among the beast, that shall ye eat. Nevertheless, these shall ye not eat of them that chew the cud, or of them that divide the hoof. As the camel, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the coney, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the hare, because he cheweth the cud, but divideth not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the swine, though he divide the hoof, and be cloven-footed, yet he cheweth not the cud, he is unclean to you. These shall ye eat. Of all that are in the waters, whatsoever hath fins and scales in the waters and the seas and the rivers, them shall ye eat. And all that have not fins and scales in the seas and the rivers, of all that move in the waters, and of any living thing which is in the waters, they shall be an abomination unto you. Ye shall not eat of their flesh. Well, now there it is, friends. And how fortunate we are that the one who made us also prescribed the kind of food that should be eaten and should not be eaten. We may not be able to explain why some of these are unclean and others are clean, but we can trust the Creator to know the difference. And in His great love for us, He's revealed it for our good. All animals that do not have split hoof and chew the cud are not to be eaten. Now, is it any surprise to us that Satan has created an appetite for the very foods God forbade? And should it be any surprise that epidemic diseases have followed the violation of God's dietary principles? The forbidden swine is a perfect example of how presumptuous appetite has overruled God's sensible restrictions. Unlike some of the other unclean categories, we can show abundant scientific evidence why pork is totally unfit for food. Pork contains a tiny microscopic worm called trichina, and if it gets into the system, the disease trichinosis results. Governments warn that there's no inspection for the parasite, and a Reader's Digest article stresses that there's no cure for the disease either. Under the title, Must Our Pork Remain Unsafe?, these statements are made about trichinosis. Quote, a single serving of defective pork, even a single mouthful, can kill or cripple or condemn the victim to a lifetime of aches and pains. For this unique disease, trichinosis, there's no cure. With no drugs to stop them, the worms may spread through the entire muscular tissues of the human system. One of two things then happens, depending on the intensity of the infection. Either death ensues, or a successful effort is made by nature to throw an enclosure or cyst around each of the teeming parasites, which then become dormant, although they remain alive for years. Don't blame your doctor. All that the best doctor can do as yet is to conserve the patient's strength and try to relieve the painful local symptoms as they appear. Well, there it is, friend. But what are those symptoms, anyway? The layman had better not worry about it, because I'll tell you, trichinosis can simulate or imitate in some degree almost any other malady. That pain in your arm or leg may be arthritis or rheumatism, or it may be trichinosis. That pain in your back may mean a gallbladder involvement, but it may mean trichinosis. Dr. Samuel Gould, a Washington health official who's made an extensive study of trichinosis, stated that the average American consumer eats at least 200 pork-infected meals during his lifetime. And just because the meat may be stamped U.S. government inspected and passed does not mean it's been tested for trichinosis or trichina infestation. Every bit of the pork would have to go under a microscope to make that determination. Now, the Public Health Service advises consumers to cook the pork thoroughly in order to kill the trichina worms. Someone has observed that eating dead worms is not very highly appealing to the palate either. The fact is that God calls it unclean and an abomination. And why is it so hard for Christians to accept God's judgment concerning the perverted craving of appetite? Now, some have asked why God created the pig if it shouldn't be eaten. And the answer to that, I believe, is self-evident. The pigs, along with buzzards, snakes, and hyenas, are great scavengers of the earth's filth and refuse. All creatures serve a purpose, but all are not suitable for assimilation into the human system as food. We may not be able to figure out in our own wisdom, friends, but the counsels of God have revealed beyond all doubt or question what's good for us and what isn't. Arguments have been advanced that there's better sanitation now since God made those Old Testament laws, and the pig is now quite fit to be eaten, whereas he wasn't back then. Well, I'll tell you, friends, a person is hard put to believe that land or sea animals have become less polluted by the passing of time. Today, there are chemical poisons infecting land, sea, and atmosphere to such an alarming degree that constant government directives are being issued. Environmentalists keep us posted hour by hour almost on the massive accumulation of deadly pesticides, insecticides, and other contaminants in every order of nature. And if reason doesn't convince us that the unclean animals are still unclean, we have the matter of God's Word on the matter. Isaiah writes this in chapter 66, 15 to 17, "For behold, the Lord will come with fire and with his chariots like a whirlwind to render his anger with fury and his rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire and by his sword will the Lord plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Lord shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh, and the abomination and the mouse shall be consumed together, saith the Lord." Now notice, this text is talking about the second coming of Jesus and proves that the nature of those animals will not experience any change that'll make them fit to eat, not even down to the very last day of this earth when Jesus returns. The swine is placed in the same category as the abomination and the mouse, and God plainly declares that the eaters thereof shall be consumed together. None can say that the warning hasn't been given in language that everybody can understand. Now, It should be noticed also that only the marine animals that have fins and scales are counted as clean in Leviticus 11. All others are an abomination to God. Now this eliminates oysters, shrimp, crabs, clams, eels, catfish, lobsters, and crayfish. Again, the scavengers have been forbidden as articles of diet. Are there sound scientific reasons for accepting God's appraisal of these shellfish and other seafood? Listen, it is quite common knowledge that these creatures feed largely on the raw sewage and pollutants in the water. Prevention magazine carried an article entitled, "Shellfish Are Dirty and Dangerous." This was in the September 1972 issue. And the author appeared reluctant to take a stand, but he was committed to telling the truth on the subject, so he wrote this: "They're succulent, they're delicious, they're even nutritious. But because of the nature of the mollusk and the sewage-like pollution of its habitat, we must in good conscience advise you to avoid shellfish, no matter how they tempt you, and even though those around you seem to be swallowing them with delight. The day of reckoning cometh." Why are shellfish so dangerous? Because they're many times more polluted than the filthy waters they inhabit. Unfortunately, they choose to live and love and multiply in estuaries along coastal regions, and these estuaries are particularly subject to discharge of sewage and other waterborne pollution from municipal discharges and from suburban home drainage. The polluted aspect of their habitat is one danger. The fact that they're filter feeders compounds the danger. Oysters, for example, because of their way of obtaining and absorbing food, have been found to concentrate poliovirus up to 20 to 60 times the level of the surrounding seawater. No other animal food offered on the menu of your favorite eating place would be served to you along with its feces. Yet this is the case with seafood. It is served whole, complete with its intestinal tract. End of quotation. Now, friends, can't you imagine, or can you imagine anybody finding this fare to be a delicacy? Over and over again, outbreaks of hepatitis have been traced to the eating of seafood. After feeding on raw sewage, the creature is harvested and sold. The disease is simply cycled from man to mollusk and then back to man again. So again, we have to confess the loving concern of an all-knowing God for the health and happiness of His creation. And those who deliberately flaunt the divine laws will finally suffer the tragic consequence that disobedience always produces. But now let's consider how to glorify God in what we drink or inhale into our body. The Bible says, whether therefore ye eat or drink, do all to the glory of God, 1 Corinthians 10:31. Now, I don't have time to go into the matter of alcohol. I wish we did today. Perhaps we can deal with it in another day. And then also about tobacco, and I don't think we need to be really pressed on this. We all understand that tobacco and alcohol are destructive drugs of our day that are absolutely killing millions of people and causing cirrhosis of the liver and, of course, lung cancer. We have other topics that we'll be presenting on these terrible modern-day evils. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.